at verse 5 once again, and it simply says, "And this they did, not as we hoped, but first gave themselves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God." So we have emphasized in the beginning of this year the need to give ourselves. Not just in the area of missions, but give ourselves, whether it's toward our family, give ourselves, whether it's toward our own individual ministries in the church, maybe you teach Sunday school, maybe you work in Awana, whatever it may be, that you give yourself to the Lord so that you end up giving yourselves to others. Now, what I began to teach this morning and what I continue to do tonight, I don't believe will actually be something that a person would be interested in or be encouraged toward unless they first give their self in total surrender to the Lord. I don't know if you noticed in the last song we sang, but we skipped over the verse. Verse 4 of that song says, "Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold." It's real easy to skip over that verse because that gets real personal when you're talking about your pocket. Because we love our money. And I'm no different. I love my money. And don't want to, you know, give up the clenched fist sometimes when it comes to money. So that's why it's important that you give yourself first. Because when you give yourself, then your hand does this. Okay, God, this actually does belong to you. So if you want to use this in a way that I would not necessarily choose, here it is, God. You direct me. You direct me the way I should give, you know, to others, whatever that may be. And so we looked here at this chapter, and I made the statement that chapters 8, 9, and 10 really dealing with the subject of benevolence, ministering to just simply to people who are struggling financially, struggling in those terms, in a physical sense, really is a gateway, if you would, into this thought of faith, promise, missions, giving. Because what you find happening with these people at the Church of Corinth was truly a matter of giving by faith or giving by grace. Grace giving. We mentioned that the word grace is mentioned a number of times in chapter 8, mentioned again in chapter 8 and then chapter 9. So you could term this grace giving. Something that the Apostle Paul said to the church at Corinth, they did not have to do. He makes the statement in verse 8. This isn't a command of God. Now, tithing, that's a different subject altogether. But when it comes to this kind of giving, this is not a command of God. He is not going to force you. He doesn't say you have to do this. But this is something that you do. What does the word grace mean? Unmerited favor. That's right. And so in a sense you're saying, I favor God. Secondly, I want to bestow favor toward others who have need. And so I choose to give toward this. I don't have to, but I choose to. Now, if somebody is choosing to do something, none of us, including Pastor Vaughn, should attempt to twist somebody's arm. That's why, again, when we do take faith promise commitments, we don't have you put your names on them. Because if a person says, "Well, I'm going to give $10 a month," and they put their name on it and they don't give, well, I could go to them and say, you made a promise, you better fulfill it, otherwise we can't keep our missionaries on the field. Well, then that attitude of giving this out of a heart of grace or grace giving is eliminated, and they're just keeping constant pressure on you. So the attitude of grace giving is certainly here. We talked about the occasion of the giving. Now, as you look at these three chapters in 2 Corinthians, you notice that the occasion is, again, is really toward benevolence. They were helping the poor saints at Jerusalem going through a very long, drawn-out period in their life where they were struggling much. And so the Apostle Paul, in speaking with the Corinthian church, must have made some kind of mention about the struggles of the saints in Jerusalem. And some of these folks in Corinth said, well, if they're struggling that much, we'd like to help them. Now, Paul, I'm sure he said, well, that's fine, that's great. Now, It's apparent that Paul heard their words that they were going to give to the poor saints at Jerusalem, but in his missionary travels, he continued on, expecting them just to follow up on the words that they had given, that we're going to help them. And so he goes on, apparently up to Macedonia, and while speaking to the churches at Philippi and Thessalonica, he must have referenced, it's pretty clear that he referenced what the Corinthians said they were going to do for the poor in Jerusalem. And when those saints in the churches, especially at Philippi, heard what the Corinthian believers were going to do, they said, we want to be part of that too. You notice back in chapter 8, verse 2, he talks about how these churches in Macedonia, again, the church at Thessalonica and the church at Philippi, were experiencing deep poverty. We don't find those kind of words about Corinth. And by what we understand historically about that city at that time, they were probably more affluent, or probably more. They were more affluent than the churches up in the region of Macedonia. And you'll hear a word used in these chapter about abundance, that the Corinthians, many of them gave not sacrificially, but they gave out of their abundance. They had it to give. And so it's like, well, we have it to give. We can help the poor in Jerusalem. So that was what they were going to do. That wasn't the case with the believers in Macedonia. They had deep poverty. What they were going to do was going to be a sacrifice. The Corinthians out of their abundance, the others out of Macedonia out of sacrifice. You almost get an impression from the words of verse 4 that Paul was reluctant to take that gift from them. He said these people at Macedonia prayed us with much entreaty. They basically were appealing to us, almost pleading, please take this gift. Praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. So I take from that personally that there was a reluctance on Paul because he saw their own condition. And yet, listen, I know it sounds like preacher talk, but I think Paul concluded, I don't want to rob these people of a blessing. You know, isn't that what you hear? Isn't that what you hear sometimes? When you know you're appealing to people and you know these people are struggling, well, I don't want to rob you of a blessing, so you go ahead and give me all you got. You know, that kind of attitude. Well, I don't think that was Paul's attitude. I think there was genuineness in being concerned about these folks wanting to give. Now, after they say they're going to give, that is exactly what they did at the beginning of verse 5. And this they did. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. But the church at Corinth, and he says it twice, maybe three times in these chapters, said over a year ago you made this promise that you're going to give, but you haven't done it yet. You haven't done it yet. And so he, in verse 6, says, I'm sending Titus back to you before I arrive so that he can challenge you once again as he once did, so that you will make up that gift that you had promised to give. And then in chapter 9, down in verse 5, it says, therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty. Now notice that word bounty. I don't think the Corinthian people had a problem being able to give. The Macedonian believers did. The believers here did not. Said that they would go beforehand, make up your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. So since you guys have it to give, you could probably give more than your Macedonian brethren who are in deep poverty. So he encourages them to give. And so anyway, we looked this morning at the occasion. The occasion was trying to minister to those poor brethren in Jerusalem. We looked at the opportunity that for the Macedonians, it was something that they were fulfilling. They were taking the opportunity to minister and were fulfilling it. But with the Corinthian church who had made a pledge and said they were of a ready and willing mind to do this, were not at the present fulfilling their words. We looked again, going back to verse 11 of chapter 8. Paul says, now therefore perform the doing of it. I made the statement this morning. Just do it. You said it. You said you're willing to do this. Now do it. The Macedonians have, and they're poor. You're well off. Fulfill what you said you were going to do. So we basically come to that point. And I just want to go back tonight and complete what we started this morning. And so I guess you could call this the operation. The operation. The occasion, the opportunity, now the operation. The actual doing of what the Corinthians had committed themselves to doing. And so I want you to go back to chapter 8. I know I'm skipping back and forth, so if I'm confusing you, that's okay. I confuse you every week, so what's the difference? I'm confusing you again tonight. So chapter 8, verse 10, and herein I give my advice, for this is expedient or profitable for you, who have begun before not only to do but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also of that which ye have. Now we're going to continue to read in verse 12. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. For I mean not that other men be eased and ye burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want, that there may be an equality. And since we're dealing first with benevolence, he's saying, now look, the believers at Jerusalem are going through a very difficult time. They are struggling, and we need to minister to them. And here's a good reason why you ought to minister, because one day you might be the one struggling. And you'll want the church at Jerusalem to be willing to minister to you. And so he said, keep this in mind. This is why we ought to consider this. You realize somebody brought the gospel to us. Somebody brought the gospel to us. And now I should be willing to take the gospel. You know, let's be honest. Europe once was the hotbed for the Christian faith. Europe today is not a hotbed for the Christian faith. It is probably less than 10% of Europeans who darken the door of a church, much less attend faithfully. And we're talking all kind of religions. So where many of us, if you went back and traced how the gospel got to you, it came from the red hot Reformation period, or through the Paulicans and all those who, you know, were not necessarily part of the Reformation, but the gospel spreading, you know, it came down to us. And I'm a saved man today because of what happened back there. And now Europe is in need of the gospel. And we, who in a sense are the hotbed of the evangelistic effort of the world, we should be willing to send the gospel. Whether it's the Greens there in Blurton, England, whether it's the losses in France, the spites in Germany. Listen, we ought to be willing, you know, to do the same thing. There's something I want you to notice here, though, in verse 12. The attitude of Paul, even toward a church who was more affluent, like the Corinthians. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to the man. I'm sorry, let me read it again. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. There seems to be an attitude here of just do what you can. We're talking about grace giving. Now, I believe that if you're of the conviction that you ought to tithe, and I am, I believe that's something that God commands us to do. That money does not belong to me. That 10% belongs to God. That is something I must do. I have to do. This is not something I have to do. He says, this is not a command. And so, since it's grace giving, he's not trying to break your bank necessarily. But his attitude, even toward this affluent church, is do what you can. Now, one person may be able to do more than the next, but don't worry about what the other person can do. Just do what you can. And I think the attitude in what we're referring to in this faith promise missions giving is this: do what you can. I'm not asking you to give your 10% tithe and then the rest of the 90% you give to the missionaries. That's not what I'm asking. But do what you can. Do what you can. Some of you may have to give sacrificially. Others that God has blessed in such a way can give out of your abundance. But listen, either way, whether you're struggling financially and give by way of sacrifice, or you are being blessed financially and give out of your abundance, it is what? By grace. By grace. That's how this comes about. And he makes it very plain. Whether we're talking benevolence giving or giving to missionaries, it is by grace. Now, you say, but Pastor, when you look at these chapters, you're right. It really is dealing with benevolence. You know, helping someone who can't pay their gas bill, someone who can't pay their rent, someone who is struggling to pay an electric bill. This is benevolence, you know, toward the Church of Jerusalem. By the way, they didn't have electric bills back then, but I'm using that by way of example. But I want you to think about something, and this was brought to light by my reading, studying from others. The writing of the church, or this letter from Paul to Corinth, takes place in AD 55 to AD 57. Now, I want you to go over to the book of Philippians, and I want you to look at chapter 4. The book of Philippians was written by Paul, AD 60 to 64. I've heard more of an exact date of AD 62. Now, I don't think you can really put an exact date on it, but we could say a 3 to 7 year period between the writing of the book of 2 Corinthians, or the letter of 2 Corinthians, and the writing of the letter of Philippians. So when you read about the giving of the Macedonians in the churches at Philippi and Thessalonica, they are giving toward a benevolent cause of helping the poor in Jerusalem 7 years previous. And now you come to Philippians chapter 4, and I want you to notice why they're giving now. In Philippians chapter 4, we'll begin in verse 9. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful or anxious, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. You realize that it is God's will sometime, according to this passage, that we suffer. It is God's will sometimes that we go without. Certainly takes grace to do that, doesn't it? Verse 13. Now, speaking of being abased and abounding, being full and being hungry, notice what he says: I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Now, I've never been on the mission field as a missionary, but I've hung around enough missionaries to know this. I've read enough prayer letters to know this. There are times in the lives of missionaries where they have to struggle. I'll never forget one of the first missions conferences we had, standing right back there where the Hunnefords are, talking to Barry and Judy Byrne. Barry and Judy Byrne are originally from this area. And their sending church all those years ago was right from this area. And they were on the field of Zambia and been there for many years and did tremendous work in Zambia. And a new pastor came to their sending church. And when he got there, he got rid of all the missionaries that church supported. He said, I want to support my own missionaries, so you're all out. Now, he didn't do it and say, he didn't send them a notice I feel led of the Lord to support different missionaries, so we're going to give you 1 year notice so that you have time to prepare. He just said, you're done as of now. Now, brother, even if a missionary has failed and they don't deserve to be supported, that's just flat out cruel. That church, and they, since they were their sending church, supported them $400 a month. And we're talking not about living in Tokyo or Paris. We're talking about living in the country of Zambia. And, you know, when you raise support to go to Tokyo, it's probably a whole lot more you need a month than it is to live in Zambia. And all of a sudden, let's say they, back in those days, maybe they needed $1,200 a month, and now they just lost a third of their support from one church and didn't have time to come home and be on furlough to try to raise that support before they lost. It was just, you're cut off. And so now they're on the field with that loss. And you know what they did? They stayed. And they made it through. And God continued to bless them. The only reason they're back in the States is because their health failed and the mission board said, you cannot stay here anymore. Now they serve in you know, Bledsoe, Kentucky, you know, that wonderful metropolis with all those people down there. And by the way, they've done a great, great job. We took a mission trip down there. Well, how many years ago was that? About 4 years ago. That was tremendous. And they have since done a tremendous job. And they were supposed to. The mission board they work with makes you retire now at how old are the Burns? How old? He's 70. So the mission board says, you are officially done. They appealed to the mission board and said, we'd like to continue ministering to these mountain people. And the mission board said, we'll have to think about that. And then they just contacted me back a few months ago and said, we're going to let you stay there till 220. So they're going to stay there for another 3 or 4 years because they got a heart to serve. But anyway, those people, you know, were suffering, if you would. And I've heard this, and when you read newsletters, which you do, you understand that sometimes the missionaries don't have what they need, but they continue on. They continue to serve the Lord. And so here's the Apostle Paul, and he has learned, sometimes I abound. And we have missionaries that have the 100% support, and other blessings are coming in, and they're doing well. We have other missionaries sometimes that struggle out on the field. Paul just said, listen, as a servant of Christ, going from nation to nation, city to city, trying to start works, he said, sometimes I'm flourishing and sometimes I am hurting. But he said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I think that's the heart of a missionary. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me, whether to be full or to be hungry. But I want you to notice what the Macedonians were doing for him, verse 14. Notwithstanding, you have done well that ye did communicate with my affliction. And I know you've heard this 1,000 times. The word communicate means to share. Verse 15. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, notice that term, in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity, not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. Now, the letter of 2 Corinthians was written, let's just say, 5 to 7 years previous to this. The attitude of the giving there, that grace giving, was an attitude of ministering in way of benevolence. And I believe here that attitude of saying, you know what, that was kind of fun helping the poor in Jerusalem. How about we help Paul get the gospel out? Now remember, Paul was a tent maker by trade. In fact, to that Corinthian church, he said, I refuse to accept anything from you because you are constantly challenging my apostleship. You are constantly hounding me about money. And so I'm just going to make tents. I'll have my own income, and if some other church helps me, fine, but I'm not taking anything from you, although, and we know the argument there in the two letters to Corinth. He said, do I not have the right to lead about a sister or spouse? Do I not have the right to receive an income just like any other apostle would. He said, I do have that right. But he said, I'm not going to do it because it causes such confrontation with you folks. And so what did he do? He resorted to basically supporting himself. Paul could have done that and did, but the Philippians said, the more time he has to sit down and make tents, the less time he's getting the gospel out. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to send to his necessity. Now remember, the Philippian church was not a wealthy church, not according to what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. He said they have deep poverty. But because the grace of God was working in their heart, they said, we want to be part of this. That basically is where you get the thought of faith promise giving, or you could call it grace giving. For the Philippian church, it was out of sacrifice. For the Corinthian church, it was out of abundance. There was neither right nor wrong. Listen, I grew up in Canton, Ohio. You know that. Canton Baptist Temple, you know that. Just be blunt. I mean, it sounds boastful and proud. Fine. There are several millionaires in the church. They support over 200 missionaries, I believe it is. Their missions giving is like $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. When I was a kid, they were supporting 100 to 125 missionaries. Their missions giving was real high. And then on top of that, every Christmas, they took a special offering during the month, and they always raised over $100,000 on top of the regular faith promise giving, just so they could say, okay, this missionary over here needs a car. We're going to go out and buy him a car. This missionary needs to put up a building over here in Zambia. We're going to build this building for him. This person needs this. We're going to do that. There were special gifts on top of that. Now, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Well, that church could afford to do that kind of stuff because they had several millionaires in the church. I don't think we have several millionaires in the church. We have a couple. No, I'm teasing. I don't think we have a couple. That doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter that some other church supports 200 missionaries or some 400 missionaries, or whether you support 40-some like we do. Brother, we get to do grace-giving. And this church has been faithful to do that for 38 years. And we're going to keep doing it. Because for me personally, it's fun. I actually enjoy it. I like writing that check. Yes, sir. If I didn't like it, then I wouldn't support other missionaries outside of our church giving. But I like doing it. And I want to do it. Now, maybe God has blessed you financially and you can give out of abundance. It's still a matter of grace. Maybe you don't feel like you have to give, and whatever you would try to give would truly be out of an attitude of sacrifice. That's okay. It's a matter of grace. It's your business and not mine. Not the leadership of the church. The only thing we do is take the total amount that we get and decide whether we can take on new missionaries or maybe increase the support we give to the missionaries that we currently have. That's how we operate. That's how we've always operated. That's the way we're going to continue to operate because it's fun. I like it. So I'm throwing this challenge out to you. You say, haven't been in grace that long, really don't understand the principle that much. Well, I hope that helps. Really what I should have done is taken about a month to go through this and go through it more thoroughly. I'm trying to jam all this in 1 week or in one day. But I trust you'll have somewhat of an understanding of it. And now you get to go before the Lord and say, Lord, is this something you want me to be part of? And if so, God, you know my situation. I got extra. Lord, show me how much to give. Lord, I don't have a lot extra. Show me what you want me to do. I will have you go back to 2 Corinthians, and I want you to notice something. When you go to chapter 9, verse 6, these words that we often hear when it talks about giving of any kind, verse 6, it says, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly. and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. A lot of us, you know, grow gardens, or maybe you grew up on a farm like I did, and you understand that principle. You know, we grew oats, we grew wheat, we grew corn on the farm. If I go out into a field and I plant 8 kernels of corn in the earth, I might get 8 stalks. I'm going to get according to what I sow. If I go out and I sow 8,000 kernels of corn, there's a chance I'm going to get 8,000 stalks of corn. So if I sow sparingly, I'm going to reap sparingly. If I sow bountifully, I'm going to reap bountifully. And that is a spiritual principle taught here and taught in the book of Proverbs as well, the book of wisdom. You say, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get us to give every single penny we have so we don't have anything to pay our electric bill and we don't have anything to pay our house note. No, I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying, when you begin to practice this, here's what I have found. That I give and God blesses it. I give a little more and God blesses it. So a little more bountifully and God blesses it. That's what has happened to me over the years. The only thing I can say is, prove me now and see herewith whether I will pour you out a blessing. Find out for yourself. But notice verse 7, and this is very good. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. It's none of my business what Harold McRae does. It really isn't. It's not my business what Mike Nicewarner does. It really isn't. It's not any of my business what Elijah or Sammy does. That's not my business. Every man as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. But then he gives this caveat to it. He says, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And so I'm just going to say this. Maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot. If you're going to go out here and talk to other members and say, you know what, they're hitting us up for faith promise, or they're hitting us up, you know, you need to be paying your tithe, and you need to be helping with the building project. Now they want us to give all this mission stuff. You know, just too much. And listen, it can seem like too much. I understand that. Understand this. You don't have to do this. This is between you and the Lord. But God says, if you're going to do it, don't do it out of necessity. God loves it when you give cheerfully. So if you're going to complain about it or be bitter in your heart, then do not give. Not to this. Again, tithing's a different matter. But this is a grace giving, whether out of sacrifice or a bounty. And so, as we do every single year, normally at the end of the missions conference this year, at the end of the month, as we finish Faith Missions Emphasis Month, we pass out, for those that want them, we pass out a slip. And if you feel led to do this, you write down whatever God has told you to do without your name. That way we know, all right, this year we cannot take on more missionaries, or maybe we can, and we go from there. No one comes to you. No one asks for your name. Just between you and the Lord. So I hope this helps those who might be newer in the church, who may not have ever heard of Faith Promise. Again, it's not something that's really new. A.B. Simpson died in 1914. Really, many believe, really coined the phrase and got this thought process, because he was big on world evangelism. That's why he founded the Christian Mission and Missionary Alliance movement. They were big into missions. So take it for what it's worth. Think about it. Pray about it. And you do what the Lord wants you to do. You could read on here in chapter 9. We won't do it tonight. And even into chapter 10 to see that attitude and spirit about giving by grace. And whether you want to call it grace giving or whether you want to call it faith promise, it doesn't matter. It's between you and the Lord. So you do as God wants you to do. Father, I thank you for your word.